So first of all, my name is Sakai Makoni. I'm the interviewer. Today's date is Thursday, the 9th of March, 2017. We're recording this at Scholastica Gwaze's house, / Ndaizive Pool, in March, Ely.
Chatteris.
Sorry.
Chatteris.
The name of the interviewee is...
Ndaizive Scholastica Pool.
Yep. Who at the time of that we're exploring in this interview was known as
Scholastica Gwaze.
Yes. And the name of this project is The Greater London Council, 1981-86, Retelling a Forgotten History. Okay, so I'm going to start with my first question. Could you tell me about your relationship to the GLC?
For the centre, it is an organisation that gave Haringey Women's Training and Education Centre the first money for setting up. So really, I suppose if the GLC had not given that money, the organization would never have existed.
Could you explain to me exactly what the Haringey Women's Training and Education Center was?
It was roughly training mature women who were 25 years and older, and training them in areas where they were underrepresented in further education and in jobs. So we had women who were looked at as priority for the center, depending on the kind of disadvantage they actually were. They were suffering in terms of education, training, and jobs.
What type of disadvantaged backgrounds would the mature women that were coming to the centre come from?
We had really, in a way, a list of women, but it was like black women, Asian women, working class women. And then, you know, we had more breakdowns of communities that disadvantaged communities within Haringey.
Did you have to live in the borough?
For training, the ones who were being trained had to be in the borough.
Were there people that came to the centre not for training?
Well, they were for training or education. That's why it was called Education and Training Center. So, again, the women who came in this case, because the Haringey Para was involved, this was set up specifically for those in Haringey. So again, you know, the priority groups depended on what was looked at as priority groups within Haringey rather than, you know, nationally or outside Haringey.
Would you be able to describe for me how you initially got involved in the project?
I got involved because I saw an advert for a job. I was then working as a design and development engineer with Philips Electronics in Cambridge, and then saw an advert for an electronics tutor, and I applied.
When you applied, had the centre already been set up and been given funding?
No, I applied in the centre I visited in 83. I applied 84, which was the first time. It was before any courses had actually been run. So I was part of the team that actually, you know, took part in terms of setting up the centre. And there was quite a lot of building work and setting up workshops at the beginning.
Oh, okay. And would you be able to explain to me exactly how the GLC connected to Haringey Women's Training and Education Centre?
At the beginning, I think Haringey, there was either a woman, I can't remember now, a women's group conducted a survey in Haringey. And the survey was really to see the shortcomings in education training jobs in Haringey for women. And it was that research, it was from that research that it was then identified that there were certain groups that were needed, you know, more support and training. So whether it was then that group that actually asked for money from the GLC to set up a center. The money, there was a school which was no longer operating, and this school could be converted into a training center. But for that, in order to be able to convert that school into a training center, you needed money. And the GLC offered the money to start converting that school into a training and education center for women.
Do you know what the name of that school was?
Somerset. Somerset School?
Okay.
Former Somerset Lower School.
Okay.
I think it was called, it used to be called Somerset Lower School, and that was then converted into a training center. And part of the work was to actually convert that into a training center. Although we paid people to come in and do some of the work, we as workers were actually involved in doing the work because Yeah, because the courses were, you know, on carpentry, building, painting and decorating. So, you know, those who ended up also teaching, who had been employed to teach, actually took on the actual work of actually converting the school. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had enough money.
And was it all women that were working there?
It was all women, yes.
Would you be able to explain the process by which you got funding from the GLC?
I don't know whether the process, the funding from GLC did not continue on a year to year. It was just like setting up, and then we would be then try and get money from the European Social Fund. for running the courses. Once we had, you know, the building to run the course, we could then apply for money from the European Social Fund to run the courses on a yearly basis.
What was it like working there? Like, how did you feel about working with women in this area?
It was really quite, to me, a very interesting time in terms of education. And I think for me, coming, you know, from working in industry as a designer, design engineer, it was also, you know, quite something that the involvement with issues about education and about women were issues that were never, you know, really addressed when you are doing, you know, design, engineering design within companies, big companies, because literally you simply have to design an item to do what it is supposed to do. Whereas at the center, the whole issue, it was almost a holistic way of looking at education. So we looked at disadvantage. We also had discussion groups which would depend on what the women were interested in. Issues, anti-racist teaching was something that was also being developed, and to see how that can be applied to the teaching. So I think for me, it really was quite an interesting step, and something that you'd get a lot of knowledge and involvement, which really was quite, for me, something that really would build you up later on in terms of looking at people and looking at what might be needed in education. I just found it, you know, really quite interesting. It was a pity that it didn't continue.
What were the demographics like of the people that you were working with? Was it majority women of colour? Was it quite a mix?
Majority women of colour. I think in terms of both trainees and staff members. Mm-hmm. But it was mixed, but the majority is our our area, our focus for the women we wanted to be involved in also came from, you know, mostly women of colour.
Would you be able to speak a bit more about like the dynamic between, you've got an all women staff and all women people that are benefiting from the services that were offered? Was there a hierarchy as such? Was it quite cooperative? Like, what were those relationships like?
We had decided that we wanted to run the center as a collective. So I think that meant everyone who was working would have been at the same salary. So, you know, you might be responsible for the child mind, as a child minder, electronics tutor, science. It didn't matter what you were doing, you would actually be at the same salary level. We also made sure that, you know, say reception work, everyone at some point would do reception work. For the women, it was also important that we had someone whose main job was to support the women. On the best that I think we looked at it and said some of the barriers to education and training for women was the fact that women in general act as support for their families. So issues like when to start lessons, we then made sure that we would start lessons a little bit later than 9 o'clock. I think we started at 10 o'clock. This would give women, you know, the chance either to take their children to a childminder and then come to the center, or to take the children to school and come to the center. So we actually started a little bit later than schools would do. If that was not done, all you end up perhaps saying is you end up with women in the courses coming in late, and then later on it's like, oh, women, you know, they don't keep up to time, they come up late, what do they expect? But because they are working as support for the family, what we observed then is that they will come late because they have to take their children to nursery or to a childminder before coming to the center. So we had to change that time. We also worked, we had someone who worked specifically with the women who came to the center to find places, because we had a nursery, but the nursery could not take all the children for the women who were coming. So some of the children had to go to childminders. So then the worker responsible for that would find placements for the children of those women who were coming for training to, and place them with the childminders within the barrack. So that worker would be liaising with the childminders in the barrack to connect and place children to those childminders. So that was like, again, one of the areas for the women. We then had also subjects like return to work, return to study, lessons, which would mean that, you know, women who had been out of education for a long time would get that training, so that again that helps them to actually perform better or learn better within their main areas. We had discussion groups, which were, you know, it really, we invited writers, we we were involved in terms of what was happening within the barra, what was happening in terms of during that time. I think that was the time when coal mines were being, you know, closed in Wales. So we had all those discussions going on, which is quite unusual, because these are, I've never been to a training center where these issues would be discussed at a regular basis, and the women would actually arrange. Those women coming to training would be, they would choose who would be able to arrange the talks and so on, and then that would happen. So, you know, there were lots of things that were being done, which in order to try and facilitate the learning for those women.
Mm. What, just going back to that though, but like, what was the dynamic between like the staff and the trainees? Was it quite a balanced relationship? Was it you were sharing it. I'm just interested because it seems like quite an interesting dynamic.
Yeah. Literally, what we had is like we had a common room, and the common room was for both trainees and for staff. So we didn't have, you know, like a common room for staff and a common room for trainees. It was a common room, you know, for both staff and trainees. So I think that again, you know, just made, because literally we were all grown up women. These were grown up women. They've got families of their own. They were not in any way different to, you know, to us. You know, apart from perhaps some are being looked at as staff and the others as trainees. But, you know, as women, we were just, you know, women in exactly, I suppose, within the society. We weren't any different. If someone saw us from outside, you wouldn't be able to say who is a trainee and who is, you know, a staff member. So that, I think, we consciously, that's why we had said we wanted to work as a collective. And the other issue was also to let the women actually arrange and manage, say, you know, when we have speakers coming in, that they were quite capable of arranging that themselves and have talks from different people.
Brilliant. Were you aware of any other organizations doing anything like this at the time? Because it seems quite unique.
There were organizations that were running centers from different parts of Britain. But whether they were exactly the same as ours, I don't think so. But there were quite a lot of training for, you know, adults, especially for areas that were, you know, identified as disadvantaged areas, because they could get money from the European Social Fund. But I suppose each area had its own priority as to, you know, which group they would be given money for. But for this one, it was specifically for women. So the training would be given to women, and the trainers would all be women.
Brilliant. Would you be able to tell me a little more about what your like electronics engineering role comprised of? Like, what would a day look like?
With electronics, again, we had the teaching, we would teach in pairs, because one of the support subjects was English as a second language.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had women who needed English as a second language. So normally you'd have, If it's a lesson, I would plan a lesson, an electronics lesson. Then the tutor, who that plan is given to the tutor who does English as a second language, so that when we actually do go in to teach, those trainees who need support would then be given support in the lesson. Again, the issue being, you know, it's difficult to kind of say you need to learn all the English, and then when you finish learning the English, you then start learning whatever science or maths or, you know, geography. In this case, it's carpentry or whatever. The issue was that, is it possible to actually make it easier? Because learning carpentry, they can still take in the issues of carpentry in any language. So instead, therefore, if there's someone who can help them from the English to, you know, another language, as English as a second language, then they can actually be learning English, but at the same time, they are learning the subject that they actually, you know, want to learn. So that was like one area. But in terms of electronics, the other goal we'd be looking at was the mathematics, because most of the retainers did not have the level of mathematics for them to be able to go into an adult education center to do electronics without that math. So it was really filling in the gap for the mathematics, so that by the time they leave the center, they would have the mathematics they need to be able to go to an ordinary training center to do a BTEC, which are the ones that they were taking at that time. So that was one of the main issues. It was mathematics and then the basic DC-AC, electricity issues that they needed to learn. And eventually, of course, what they did was that after the center, we could register them to go and sit an ordinary BTEC exam. They would not have been able to go and do that. So in a way, the center fed into the BTEC for those who wanted to go and do further education. For those who didn't, we also had a worker who specifically really was in contact with most of the, say, for building organizations to put those trainees into their center. I think we used to have something like some weeks of practical training, and it would be up to the center to make sure that the women doing those practical courses can go, like plumbing, painting and decorating, brickwork, and so they could actually be placed somewhere and will have practical work to do. So some would be taken in if they felt that they wanted to keep them.
Brilliant. What were your views or opinions of the GLC?
For us, I think we felt that this was, you know, quite important. In terms of education, and perhaps what I would call, in my view, what I would call appropriate education, because it really was education which would be suitable for these women, for this group of women with specific needs. But also they are, you know, members of families. They need to understand, they needed to understand, not just, you know, you've just come here to learn electronics, that is it, but that, you know, the environment is much wider than just electronics. Electronics is working within a broader environment which they needed to understand, whether that environment was politics. If, some workers are losing their jobs in Wales because the mines have been closed, it was important that that issue is discussed and the women sit down and discuss. Perhaps get someone from Wales to come and address them so that they know what is happening. and those issues to me is very relevant education for people who do science and who do the kind of courses we were doing, which is, you know, like plumbing, painting and decorating. You know, they still need to participate within their own community.
Did you see, how was the GLC's support in relation to Haringey, the Women's Centre, perceived?
I think it was really quite essential. I also feel that even though, say, the centre was there up to 91 and then it stopped, it still has made, to me, it still contributed quite a lot to education, especially adult education. I think the view of what adult education is has changed. People now feel that, you know, education is something that you do all your life. I think at that time, people didn't feel like that. Also, I think colleges and universities, during that time, there were very few universities that had an adult education, you know, department. They really didn't feel that, you know, adults were part of the of schools, colleges, or universities. But after that, the whole thing changed, and they were now taking in adults areas in adult education. So those institutions actually took up, you know, what we then were actually doing, ended up being taken up, which to me is a very, very good thing, because in the end, that's where the training needed to be done. Although, of course, some of the aspects that we were doing, you know, are still not there. But at least the institutions have actually opened up to the fact that, you know, adults need to be part and parcel of their own, you know, students or clients in their colleges.
What were some of your highlights of your time working at the centre? Things that stick out in your memory?
I think probably the most important point is when, like at the end of the first courses, which would have been 85, because for the first time you would have, you know, the women who would have completed, you know, their courses, being able to show you what they have done. The technicians course, science and technician, you know, they would have done some experiments about what to do, and I know there was one which was about the strength of hair. But after they've done that and they can present it to you and they say, this is what we did and this is what we found out, they've made something carpentry, they've produced something that they can actually put there, you can see. And for the people who are building trade, you would actually see from what they've built from foundation to the wall, so you'd actually go and be able to see it. And those who were doing plumbing would have come in and done their plumbing, so you can actually see that they have done, and these women had done it. Whereas before, you would really think they would do this. But it was just interesting to see that you can see the wall and you can say, yes, actually, if it was possible, I could these women could build a house completely. We didn't have anyone for roofing, but they could build the house from foundation, and the plumbers could do it, and they were all women. And also the interesting thing is that these women sometimes actually did go to do some of the work, they would be able to go with someone, like with hiring a council workers to go and do like plumbing work together. So it's unusual for members of the family to see a woman come in as a plumber. But I think for me, you know, it really is quite interesting to see that, well, these things can be done and they can do it.
Were there any instances of opposition to there being a women-only centre doing more traditionally male studies?
Oh, the opposition was this idea of, you know, women only. I think for some men, it really was like a shock if they came and it's like, if you go there, you know, there isn't a single man, they're all women. And I think some of them used to call us names, like, the bus stop where all these women, you know, would take their buses and come down to it. And, you know, and they were saying, oh, this is, like, they called it Pink Lady or something of this sort. So it was like, but it was this idea of, you know, it can be all women, that they didn't like. And we were kind of saying, well, you know, they are only here for training. That this is the only time they are here as women. Every day they go back to the main, yeah. And they go back, but also, you know, there are organizations where they've been only men. No one has ever complained about that. But definitely, for some people, it was a shock that it's all women.
Mm.
They wanted it to. Well, we should be giving it, but not all women. We should allow men in. But we thought it was important that it should be all women, the environment should be all women.
How did you feel as a migrant woman yourself from Zimbabwe, as a woman of colour, as a mother to three children, as someone working yourself, like, could you describe to me any impact working in that role had on you?
I would say, well, the impact is really was more in terms of just realizing, I think, in some ways, how much disadvantage, you know, certain groups and, like, my group and others have to actually overcome in order to start, you know, gaining something from the facilities that are available, whether it's in education or work. I think that really is something that you suddenly realize. There is a lot perhaps we shouldn't really be looking at it all the time and just saying, oh, we are disadvantaged. The issue is not so much as looking at the disadvantage just on its own, but to realize how much people have done without you know, the kind of help and support that other groups have got. And I think that to me is like, then you begin to appreciate that, you know, these so-called disadvantaged groups, you know, are really very, what do you call it? They are very productive, because I really do believe that, you know, to be able to overcome that, to be able to then be able to achieve something, just shows that, you know, these people really, in a way, are extremely productive. They really are extremely productive. They are not dumb. They are intelligent to be able to go through that and achieve something. Otherwise, we would all be just around really doing nothing and falling apart.
What happened to the center?
The center just closed. It closed down. I think at one stage, I think about 1990, again, because this is funding that we had to obtain every year. So it's on a yearly basis. I think we just found ourselves with less staff to be able to carry out the work that needed doing. And if we didn't apply for money, then if you can't apply for money, you there was no way. We would just start going into debt because we have no money. And I think we ended up with something like 5 or 6. That's not enough to run the center. And that's how it closed. But I think also they were going to build something at the center. You know, it wasn't that, you know, we could keep this former secondary school for much longer. But we'd kept it from 83 to 91. So that was quite, you know, long enough.
Do you have any contact with any of the women that you used to work with?
No. I suppose for me it's because also coming from Cambridge rather than living in London. I suppose those who are living in London would probably, you know, quite easily get in touch.
Thinking about the GLC,
mm-hmm.
And Erasure, mm-hmm. lots of younger people today don't seem to know that much about the GLC. Why do you think it's been forgotten?
I would have thought it was mostly politics. I think, you know, it was all politics of the GLC. I do believe, for me, I feel that the GLC then, if it was doing something similar in other boroughs as it was doing in Haringey, then politically I'm not sure that it would always be supported for doing so. And I think that there seems to me a tendency to say that, you know, the GLC, you know, wasn't really operating well when it was under, you know, Ken Livingstone. So I think it's more politics rather than anything, you know, anything else. But for me, I really do think something was done during, for centers like the one I was involved in, something really useful was being done. You know, which you don't see the value of it from just one point, you can see the holistic value of it. And I believe that is quite important, and it is something that perhaps, you know, more and more people involved in education should try and look into doing.
Could you expand on what you mean by politics of the DLC?
Well, I suppose mostly to do with Labour Party and, you know, the main parties, and I suppose who controls the who controls London, who is the mayor of London at each stage. So I think that is something that will always is likely to me to have this kind of, you know, seesaw kind of change, because it means, you know, if you have someone who is from this party doing this, then, you know, next time you need to find, the other party has got to find something wrong with it, and to say we are now going to change this and do this, and then next time the other party will do. So I think, you know, in some ways it's politics, and we all have to have that right to change our minds. But in the end, in terms of actually what the population wants, is, I think, to me, it's always there. Doesn't matter which party is controlling, you know, the people who are there. They need certain, you know, education, training, all the time. It shouldn't be changed simply because, you know, there is a change of who is in charge. It is sad in some ways that, you know, even training names for training change every time. You know, this party calls it this, the next party changes it, it calls something else. You know, if youngsters need training, if women need training, if men need training, they just need training. This idea of changing names, changing, you know, management, you know, structures and so on, I think for me is just a waste of time. So I feel that is one of the reasons why things change, not particularly that what is being done is wrong.
Why do you think the seesaw politics you're talking about would impact young people today not knowing about the GLC?
Because I think in the end, if you don't know something, one, you may still go through the same process again. I think the only example perhaps I can give is, you know, if you are in an organization and you stay in an organization, say for 10, let's say 8 years, that organization, if it had a certain purpose it wanted to do, you would have seen within that 8 years, certain things would have been talked about, because they didn't know what to do, what could we do about it, they changed it and so on and so forth. But when a new member comes, okay, after 8 years, it's quite easy for the new member to come, and quite rightly, and they would raise the same problem that way, you know, that was raised 6 years ago. And people spend a year talking about that problem. And so it is very important to know at least that this point was discussed, and this is what came out of this point. Whether what came out was, you know, what you accept or you don't accept, it is very important just to know that these things have already been talked about, have already been looked into. And after being looked into, then this, you know, they moved on to this and why they moved on to that point. Because that's the importance of the young ones knowing what happened before. Otherwise, they would be repeating the same thing again and going through the same emotions again, because they don't know that, you know, people did try it and then found out that it didn't work because of this, because of that. It's very important to know that history. So at least today, you know where to start at a point where you are moving forward, not just starting back again, you know, 10 years. So I think it is very important for people to know what sort of programs were run, why were they run, what were the good things that came out of those programs, what were perhaps the things that did not work, because from that, you know, they can then say, oh, perhaps this is something we can do now today. So I think it is extremely important that people should know quite, you know, clearly what was done, why it was being done, and what was the outcome. So today, what can be done?
What were your, like, political opinions of the GLC at the time?
For us, it wasn't so much like, we didn't have like a very picture of what the GLC is. The only thing is that we knew that it had, you know, allowed us, it had given us the opportunity to actually do something. They were not there every day to say, oh, this is what we want you to do. What they did was, you know, say, oh, we've looked at your problem, we can give you, you know, money to start setting up, and then you get on with it. And the way that program involved companies in Haringey, colleges in Haringey, women's groups in Haringey, you know, the Haringey Council, it really did allow, you know, that kind of work, crosswork. And I think for me that was very, very good. And if that could be done for Haringey Women's Training and Education Centre, surely there must be other areas where the same thing could be done.
I'm wondering, in terms of the timing, so Haringey, this may not be correct, Broadwater Farm estate is in Haringey. Were the uprisings in Broadwater before the opening of the Haringey Women's Centre?
It was after.
Oh.
Yes, we were just, we were very near Broadwater Farm.
So the centre was opened after the uprisings happened, or the uprisings happened whilst the centre was there?
Whilst the centre was there. We were actually closed for a while.
Yeah, how did that impact you guys?
Oh, that was, you know, that's why we had to close. We literally, yes, we did close for a while during the uprising. There is no way we would continue.
So
we used to actually go to Broadwater Farm to sometimes to buy lunch and come back. So yeah, I'm very near Broadwater Farm. There is no way that we would have continued open.
So did some of the women, were women who were at the centre affected by the uprising?
Oh, yes.
Would you be able to expand?
We did. Definitely at the time when Cynthia Jarrett died, we were at the centre, and after that, we did close because the atmosphere was just so just not good for people to be around. And we actually did send people who went to the funeral at the end, who took part in the funeral, because we were just neighbors. Mm. We were just very near Broadwater Farm. So, yes, because again, one of the things that we actually did do at the center, one of the discussions we would do were also the issues on racism and how that could be, you know, how anti-racism could be used in terms of teaching, so that, again, these are issues that most of the time people would not, I don't know whether they are doing it now, but in that time people didn't think, you know, like you say you're teaching mathematics and they would be telling you, you know, there is no racism, or, you know, in mathematics, and there is no gender issues, you know, appearing in mathematics, but, you know, there is. So with the center, those were issues that we would sit down and actually talk about and say, you know, how would our teaching material and so on and methods actually make sure that they don't enforce racist, you know, ideas in them.
Would you be able to give me an example of how you did that?
Well, I think for, say, nursery, for instance,
mm-hmm.
the choice of toys is quite, can be demonstrated, you know, quite easily. But in most cases, you'd find that, you know, during that time, you'd hardly see any toys that are appropriate in terms of children of color. So, you know, how many black dolls would you find in, you know, or even in terms of books that you would, you know, you'd find that are, you know, really appropriate, or that, you know, black children would identify with as heroes. In there. So just being able to sit down and actually say, in fact, you don't just say any story is okay. You need to read it and find out whether this story is a story that would be a healthy story to read to children of color. So that's one. I mean, with things like maths, you also have gender issues in maths. Things like, you know, you can get a question in maths where, yes, it's a mathematical calculation, but, you know, you might be told that the example would be, you know, you are going to calculate how long it takes, and it would, might involve it, how long will it take. There's a family, and the father has got to mend something. You know, how long will it take for the father, and how long is it going to take mother to cook this? So, you know, it's like, it just looks like, oh, it's a calculation about, you know, time, but it isn't. It actually is telling you who is doing what. So it's like, it's quite interesting sometimes that, you know, people really sit down and say, what are we saying? What does it mean? A child who is sitting down and listening to it. So yes, these are some of the things that, you know, I thought sometimes you'd sit down and you think about it and you say, right. It's also the same, like, what do you look at as being knowledge that you must know? Because if we live here, it's what is important. Maybe, you know, nowadays people talk about games and so on and so forth. But if someone is coming from another culture, their base, their knowledge is different. And no one is going to ask them those things for them to show that they've actually learned something. So that's why the other issue was this idea of English as a second language, that instead of people stopping accessing knowledge in other areas until they can speak English should perhaps not be so. What should happen is they should be learning English while at the same time they are continuing with the knowledge they have already and building on it. Because, you know, you could spend 2-3 years, you know, just trying to speak English, and then by then you've been out of your area of work for 3 years and you've got to go back in time to catch up. It's not good. So it is important sometimes to actually look at things that seem quite okay, things that do not seem to be discriminatory in any way or racist in any way, and just think about what exactly do they mean.
This is my almost final question. I'm just interested in terms of it being a women's only space, exploring gender issues. Did the centre address like LGBTQ rights at the time, and was sexuality explored at the centre?
Sexuality was explored, and in fact I think lesbians were one of the group of women who were also priority group. So yes, but, you know, again, because this was a women center and most of the things were really geared for, you know, in terms of women. Yes.
Was there any discrimination issues or anything around sexuality, or was it quite a welcoming space?
Well, the issue was also, well, just like black women were one of the main groups for the center, the priority groups, lesbians were also as priority groups on the basis that they looked at it, that they also have, you know, that disadvantage, and they need, therefore, you know, the space where they can, then therefore, you know, be able to talk about those issues among the women, you know, themselves. And the same with, you know, the issue of also, you know, it's like black women, there may be black women who are also, you know, a lesbian, they will be able to do. But the whole, it's like all the issues that we felt would touch on women as a whole. And of course, the issue of class, that's why also working class women were a priority in terms of the women who came.
Brilliant. And so my final question is, have you got anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, I just hope that, you know, for me, it's really when I read through what we were doing, I just find in it a whole lot of things that are really relevant to education, especially if that education or training is going to be meaningful to women. It's like the way it has to be run and the culture behind whatever is being given is really important to establish it first and know what it is. But what is the culture, say electronic design, what is the culture behind electronic design up to now? Because unless you know that culture, you know, for another culture, in a way, it's, to me, I look at it as a male culture. And until it has changed to include the culture for women, the women will only be struggling because they are struggling to be something else that they are not in. They are struggling to work in a way that they do not work. You know, it doesn't mean that science can only be worked in a manner that the way men work. So I think for me, it is very, very important to look at the culture for each area and then say, this is the prevalent culture. And therefore, if everyone is going to take part, how can we start to change that culture so that it caters, you know, for everybody, at least as far as you can.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Gogo.
Thank you.